some time for questions, and I certainly hope you have some. And I would just ask you, as I'm sure you know by now, if you would stand up and state your name and your affiliation before you ask the question, and then we'll try to repeat the question here so that everybody can hear. So anybody want to start us off? Yes, in the back there. Okay, so the question is, are there any tips for recruiting?
So one thing I've found really helpful is that you can do these online surveys. I use SurveyMonkey a lot for that. And so one of the things that's very helpful is to set up a SurveyMonkey survey that asks your qualifying questions and asks for demographic data and even availability, so that by the time someone has responded to your survey, you know that, A, they're interested in your study, they've got the matching qualifications, they're available when you need them to be available, you've got contact information so you can follow up by phone and schedule them. So it really gets a lot of the sort of cold calling part of it out of the way. Another suggestion is, if you haven't done this before and you don't have staff in-house to do the recruiting, it is kind of a time-intensive or sort of administrative job. There are actually people out there who are recruiters for hire. So I think you could probably Google, you know, usability recruiters or something like that and find somebody who would actually do this for you. And they'll charge you some money for that. You know, I last number I heard was maybe $140 per user, which gives you an idea of how time intensive it is. So, and also if you work with a rented usability lab, a lot of times they'll have recruiters on staff that will do your recruiting for you. Anybody else?
Something else you might want to consider, if the organization is large enough, we have a development partner program where we have 12 or 15 key development partners, so there tend to be larger organizations in this case, that are our go-to people that we can ask to help us look within their organizations. Typically, if you keep going back to the same people, they sort of get tired of you and don't really want to participate anymore, so you have to keep finding new people. Often, though, there are a lot of people who really want to help you make a better product, that really enjoy thinking that what they tell you and what they suggest might actually be incorporated into a product that other people will see. And so you just have to find those people within the organization, and honestly, incentives help.
Actually, I have a couple other things. One is, if you have an existing list, like a marketing list or a, you know, employees list or something like that that might represent your target audience, you can use that to publicize the fact that you're recruiting. And then the other thing is, when you are screening people, there are a couple questions that I always ask to kind of weed out people who might either be biased or spies or professional usability testers, which you kind of want people who don't do this for a living because they get a little bit too good at it. So I always ask people, have they participated in a usability test in the last 6 months? And if they have, I don't use them. And I ask them, are you or is anyone in your immediate family employed either by this company or in this industry? You know, because you don't want people who, you know, are maybe work for your rival or just know too much. And also I weed out people who are professional web designers or web developers, because they also tend to, like, they just know too much about how to use the web, assuming you have a web-based product.
I think there was a question in the front here.
Have you ever encountered the purchaser versus user problem, and what do you do about it? For example, you have, like, the designer search interface, and the librarian is the purchaser, and they want, like, Boolean complex and or not brackets capabilities, whereas the user usually does not know how to use this, even though the librarian says they're training it.
So if I can slightly abridge the question, I believe the question is, have you ever encountered the dichotomy between what the user wants and what the purchaser wants in terms of usability? And the answer is yes.
Boy, do we ever. That is it is fundamental to what we do. When Science Direct started, it was really geared to librarians. End users would never have, well, end users wouldn't have used technology anyway. So now we're in a world where everybody can use technology. Purchasers of our products, even if it's a medical product, tend to be a hospital, but the end user might be a physician or a nurse in that hospital. And it is a very, very difficult problem because the user interface that the librarian will use will completely not be the interface that an end user will want to use. Even if they're technically very astute and comfortable searching, they still see an interface that appeals to a librarian and they say, this does not appeal to me. I like Google. I mean, plain, just enter something. I don't want to be bothered. So we try very hard to create products based on our personas about who we believe is using that product the most. And we honestly, from a user-centered design perspective, I only care about the end user. I don't care about the purchaser. That's sales and marketing's problem to focus on. So they have to determine what will be useful for that market. But we do give them a lot of research so that they can show the purchaser that here is the validation that the person using the product will actually be able to use it and they want it. And it is a hard sales call to make, but I think we've come a long way in the last 15 years on that topic.
Are there other questions? Back here, yes.
Dave Martinson from American Chemical Society. I was wondering how you know when your job is complete. And maybe in one sense it's never complete, but if you're launching a new interface, and maybe CrossMark is a good example, so you had some feedback, you made some changes, to address the issues. Did you go back and check with your original focus group or with maybe more of those 55 people that applied that you did select to see if the changes you made indeed were met with approval by the people that were the criticisms that had initially been voiced?
I think probably most of you heard that, but the question is, when are you finished? Do you reiterate? Do you go back and retest the decisions that you made? And specifically, what did we do across REF? So I think there are two different questions there. I can answer the second one, which is we did not go back and redo it. We're a small organization. This was actually the first time we had done any kind of formal usability study. We should, and I think if we had the resources that, say, Andrea has, we definitely would have. And I imagine that we will in the future as we actually launch the service. But I think maybe if our panelists could address this idea of iteration.
So my simple answer to the first part of the question is you stop doing this either when you stop finding out anything new or when you run out of time or money. And I can tell you that the first one has never happened to me. It's usually the second one.
It's always the second.
And actually, I want to say that there isn't really, I mean, I know that in the sense that a product goes out to market is an endpoint, but there really isn't an endpoint because things are always changing, the people who are using your product are always changing, and creating a cycle of testing is really wise, and a cycle of user needs research is always wise because 3 years ago, the questions that we asked our users are very different from what we ask them today because of what's happened. And I think that if you don't have that cycle, then you're assuming something is good enough and it will go stale. So that's my opinion.
And doing a little bit is better than doing not at all. So even if you can't do as much as you would desire, even a tiny bit. And there are people who do a usability test in 2 hours just by like stopping someone in Starbucks and saying, hey, can you take a look at this? I'll give you a Starbucks card. So it doesn't have to be complicated and in a lab and all that stuff.
I think the only thing I would add to that is don't bother a user if you're not going to do something about it. I think that's really critical, just to test and bring it back, and nobody's got the money, the time, or the desire to make the changes. Don't go bother the user.
Stuart over there.
My name is Stuart Wills. I'm a scientist, and I was very interested in the ethnographic study that apparently just got started. Got a little tired just thinking about how one would actually take that data and figure out what to do with it. But I was wondering if you'd be willing to tell us a little bit more about next steps on that study and where you're going with that.
right? I can say that we did a user needs study in 2006, and the first step was this synthesizing, and at the time they created a list of the trends that they noticed. And then what they did was develop some, I don't want to say products, because our products were out there, but they revitalized some of the products and changed them and moved into usability testing of those products. In this particular case, what we're really looking for is something that the libraries can do to make a difference in the lives of the researchers, and we haven't found that yet. What we've really started to do is just make a list of patterns, and we're so far only the interviewers or the note takers have read their own notes, so we haven't even read all of the notes together, but we've started to generate a list of possible themes, and our next step will be to really concretize them, and then what we're hoping to do is actually sit with other librarians who have a stake in the matter, or library staff who have a stake, who might be able to brainstorm some ideas for how to solve some of the problems. So that's where we're going with it.
Right here. So let me just repeat that in case some in the back didn't hear it. So what's the relationship between usability and analytics?
We actually have, again, fortunate to have experts in web analytics assigned to a lot of our products who add their feedback and work with our teams to develop how we will decide what we're going to usability test. We do A/B testing, and we are fortunate to have that data. And I think a lot of people don't realize how easy it is to get that data and to use it, to incorporate into both product decisions about how to enhance the product in the future, as well as how can we use this to make sure that the tasks we ask the user to do actually flow within the way they think about it. It would be a very good topic. You could spend an hour on web analytics.
And I find that the web analytics data is very complementary to usability testing. It's quantitative, it's a large audience, it's a shallow dive like Lisa was talking about. It tells you the what, it doesn't tell you the why. Usability testing will tell you a lot more about the whys.
Yes, in the back there. So the question was, why make 95% of the users click on the Crossmark logo when it's probably going to be current? And why not do it dynamically? Do you want to take that?
I actually was thinking you might be better. If you want me to take a step.
Well, I mean, I can speak for Kirsten saying that she said we should do that. And we had a technical problem because the Crossmark service is centralized, and it's going to be distributed to lots of different publishers, and they didn't want to be reliant on our server. So the original plan was to do exactly what you suggested, and we wanted to do this, and this is basically a workaround. My personal non-Crossref view of this is that we need to revisit that at some point. But I think for the initial launch of this particular service, this is a compromise that we reached. But it's a very, and it's also, I should mention, something that people said. We heard this from the people we talked to in our focus groups. I think we heard it from the people we talked to in the usability study, didn't we? I don't remember documenting that, but it has come up from many of our communities, so it's a very good suggestion, and it's one that we did not discard lightly. Yeah. Yeah. So we can... So I don't want to get too much into what Crossmark is, although we are going to do a session on that next if you're interested. And but Linda, did you have one? I think we have time for maybe one more question. All right, well, I want to respect your time. It's 10:15. I think the panelists can stick around for a few minutes if you have individual questions for them. Thank you so much. You've been a terrific audience.